Mute that. All right, very good. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Lynn and all. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good morning, everybody. You have Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson here at the House of the Rising Sun, and what a wonderful morning it is so far. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good.
Let me see here. For some reason, my computer's doing all kinds of weird stuff to me, Bruce. I'm about to put a major curse on Bill Gates. I'm telling you.
Oh, well, there's the problem. It's got to be somebody outside of us that made technology that is the scapegoat, right?
I know, and it's so funny because the it all was working so good. Everything was working so good for me. It was like, oh, I finally got this Windows 8 thing, and I 8.1 and whatever, and I downloaded to 10, and 10, when I downloaded to 10, I couldn't keep a Wi-Fi signal. It would not connect to Wi-Fi no matter what I did. So I know there's some workarounds on that now, but so I couldn't be connected. So I had to take off the improvement because the improvement made everything not work. So so I took off the improvement and everything was going fine. I'm looking at my screen. I've got my Pal Talk. I've got my Windows where I can go and look at my course or whatever on the internet. Well, then all of a sudden, just the other day, I don't know if there was a like, during the night when you're sleeping, they come in and do things like aliens. You know how the aliens come in and do things to you at night when you're sleeping? Well, that's what they do. This is what Microsoft does. See, in the middle, or Dell or whomever, in the middle of the night, they come in, they make changes on your computer, and then you get this message, oh, your computer's been updated. And you come and look and say, oh, update, what does that mean? Oh, that means that now all of a sudden I have to do all kinds of little tricks to get to look at my email because I can't look at my email and Pal Talk on the same screen because now Bill Gates has once again destroyed my world. So it's hilarious. It's just so funny because this is the most convenient thing that ever was invented. It is the most amazing technology that ever came about. It's beyond the nuclear power. It's beyond the discovery of, galaxies far, far away. It's a way that you and I and all of these separated ones can find to make a attempt at communication. And it's the most marvelous thing that ever was, and all I do is complain about it.
Well, isn't that a perfect example of it's always a choice between the only two teachers, right? It's in this case, it could be Gates and Jobs, but I think it's actually probably better to focus on the teacher of inclusion and the teacher of exclusion.
Exactly. It's just so funny how easily. Even though I know for sure that this is exactly the way that I set it up, how easily I go to blaming the person or the industry or the anything that I perceive as outside of myself for doing this to me.
Exactly. Yeah, and we all do it 24/7,
24/7.
365. But we have another option. There is a better way.
What is that better way? What can I do instead of that?
Are you going to be the shill in the conversation?
I'm just kidding. I'm in
Why?
that kind of mood this morning.
Funny you should ask, Lynn Johnson. I just happen to know of a thought system that should work for you.
Oh my goodness. And this is what's so beautiful about this thought system too, is that it is a choice. And
Yep.
that if I make the choice consistently to fall for ego, I'm going to be miserable. And if I make the choice consistently for listening to the Holy Spirit, that sweet inner voice in me, that is just the one that's saying, I wouldn't do that if I was you. that's not a good idea, or wow, what you know, there's a little voice in me that's always telling me when I'm going astray. And you know, either I listen to it and do what I need to do to make myself comfortable, happy, joyful, whatever, or else I don't listen to it, and I do whatever I can do to make myself miserable and everybody else around me. And you know, when you go to the source and look at who's doing it, it's so easy to see, and yet it's so easy to forget.
Right. And one of the challenges I think is for all of us is even when we're aware that there are those two thought systems, the ego will co-opt that communication. It's kind of like diverting an email message or you know, an electrical signal and filtering it and processing it and saying, oh, well, because the I think the message as it comes directly into our mind is all you need to do is let go of the belief in separation, and then you don't really need to do anything. And that's why that in the teacher's manual, actually, yeah, no, it's in the workbook. I know where it is. It actually it's on page 401 because there's a study group in Phoenix, Oregon, with the tip of the hat to Beverly Beck, who hosts that one on Tuesday evenings and has for some time. That auspicious, wonderful group, and a nod to all them, reads what is forgiveness every at the start of every study group. And so it's really all about, you know, just not making the air real, you know. And that's basically what we can do whenever we take those promptings, those gentle, like you say, the sweet, gentle inner promptings that remind us that we have another choice. And instead of, you know, twisting them, and I'm gonna read the third paragraph of What is Forgiveness. It says, an unforgiving thought does many things. In frantic action, it pursues its goal, twisting and overturning what it sees as interfering with its chosen path. Distortion is its purpose and the means by which it would accomplish it as well. It sets about its furious attempts to smash reality without concern for anything that would appear to pose a contradiction to its point of view. And then the other thought system, the one that, like you say, is sweet and gentle and kind and so soothing and so reassuring that, you know, when we listen to it, it's like it puts us at ease completely. And that system is described in the next paragraph. It says, forgiveness, on the other hand, is still and quietly does nothing. It offends no aspect of reality nor seeks to twist it to appearances it likes. It merely looks and waits and judges not. He who would forgive must who forgive must judge, for he must justify his failure to forgive, but he who would forgive himself must learn to welcome the truth exactly as it is. And I think the truth that the Course continually talks about, and that we continually have an opportunity to switch to, the different operating system that does give us what we want 24/7, 365, is that we really need do nothing. Obviously, we may be prompted to take action, but the real fulfillment, the peace that we're looking for, is in the undoing and in the release from the compulsion and the obsessive choosing of the teacher of madness in our mind that says, oh, you have to have this happen in the world, and you have to now take this action in order to be happy. Well, no. It actually doesn't require anything in terms of on the level of form. But if we're allowing that inspiration to you know, go forward, it inevitably does result from time to time in taking some action. But it's only when we recognize that there's no requirement to change the form. We're no longer appendaged on you know, our happiness is no longer appendage to an outcome. It's no longer dependent on things happening a certain way or not happening a certain way in this amazingly, seemingly vast hologram that we call a world, huh? But that's such a difficult thing for us to keep consistently in mind, because we're so well versed in projecting outward, what's in the contents of our mind instead of, you know, seeing that it's all inside. And this morning's workbook lesson, I was just thinking of that one.
It's a great one.
It ties into that perfectly, doesn't it?
It does. And yeah. This whole idea of the changing mind, changing thought system, moving into this other way of thinking, what actually happens, you know, when you first are looking at it, and the ego, of course, is saying, well, you know what, if I give up my will, then I'm going to be a helpless buffoon. You know, God can do anything he wants to me. If I give up my will, if I'm not here holding up for myself, then, you know, I'm just going to be a nothing. And you fight because, you know, you really want to be able to say, yes, I did that. Yes, I am good. Yes, I knew what I was doing when I had that idea. That
when I struck up on my own. Yeah.
I knew where I was going. And you think, you know, how often did that prodigal son think about that? And until he was absolutely desperate, did he finally say, okay, I guess I didn't really know what I was doing. And, you know, and you have to make that admission. That is the beauty of that particular story is not only because, well, there are many beautiful things about it. The father gave him the freedom to do whatever he wanted to do. He did what he wanted to do, and he found out that it didn't help him. When he found out it made him miserable, he decided, he chose again. And when he went home, the father was very happy to see him because he, you know, in that particular case, he missed his son. You know, in this particular case, he just, you know, his son is just being goofy and out there hurting himself for no reason. So, you know, when you switch your mind like that, you know, you recognize, oh, I can just go home and be safe and happy. And I can do that right now. I don't have to do that in the future. I don't have to do that after I've done the workbook lessons, you know, 10 times or, you know, I can do that now. I can be home, safe and happy right here, right now. And I don't, and I can still be here, living in this world, living in this body and doing what I'm doing because that's a part of the script. And I know I can do that and be perfectly safe and never be harmed. I also know, and this I do know completely within myself, that, you know, nothing is going to happen to me. You know, this body is not going to die. I mean, this body may die, but I personally am not. And everything that I am is a forever thing. And now, but the point that I was getting to here with all this rambling around is that when I recognize that I can't be harmed, I recognize that this world is basically an illusion and that what I'm doing is walking in a dream and that, you know, where I am is perfectly safe, then I can look at the things that happen in the world and the things that happen to me, and I can look at it like, oh, here's a story. I remember, you know, I've seen this story hundreds of times, and, you know, I've always predicted what the end would be. I always predicted what was going to happen. I can stop predicting. I can stop trying to make things happen a certain way. I can stop trying completely. I can relax, and guess what I can do? I can enjoy my life, and I can be curious to see how it's going to turn out instead of terrified that it's going to turn out some way I can't control. Now I know there's no way I can control how it's going to turn out, but I know that I'm going to be safe no matter what, and so I can have fun with it. I can be curious about it. I can be happy. I can be joyful. And I can share that happiness and joy in a meaningful way rather than in a clingy, needful way because I got to get as much as I can before the end. Now it's like I can have as much as I want and the end never comes. I can just enjoy myself as much as I want. And I can spread that joy throughout, you know, my entire life. And all it does is make me happier. Give me more. And it is self-perpetuating once you get it started. But you have to be really you have to be dedicated. You have to have a devotion to doing it. And the thing, and he tells us, if you didn't have such incredible support along the way, if there weren't, if the whole universe wasn't bending itself to help you along the way, you'd never be able to do it. But you've got everything is conspiring with you. And so, just be aware of that. Everything's conspiring with me here. Good. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I just to echo what you just said, which is great. Everything is conspiring to support us in our journey home from the dream, to return our identity from the character on the screen to the character in the theater watching the characters on the screen, projected from our minds. The conspiracy is either one of love or fear. The ego's conspiracy is always to get us to identify with the dream figure, the hero of the dream, and to say, oh, well, that movie celebrity figure that I call myself, is the one that I need to be concerned about tremble with fear and yell with rage when anything happens, and boo and hiss, it's like a vaudeville thing, when everything isn't going my way, and then shout with elation when things, seem to be, when I seem to be victorious over the evil forces,
Thank God, he's on my side.
the Snidely Whiplashes, are vanquished, and Nella's rescued from the railroad tracks, And the inner Dudley Do-Right takes over. Well, but we're still, fixated on the dream figure. But if we can, get back into the theater in our mind, reeling those things back in, then we're shifting that awareness back to the dreamer instead of the dream figure. But earlier when you were talking, there was a wonderful short video that's, I think, I don't know if it was the original or not, but it was something that my Facebook friend Jim Gearhart, a tip of the hat to Jim, posted on Facebook this morning, and it's a short clip showing a commander on a large battleship, moving ahead full speed, however many knots, 70 or 80 knots or whatever, through the ocean, and it's on the radio, and it says, such and such, talking to this other party on the radio, please divert your. This is USS. Not Enterprise, but
Might as well be.
what a constitutionalist say. I can't remember the name of the boat. Anyway, please divert your course 15 degrees east, immediately. And then the response back comes back, will not do. Please divert your course 15 degrees west. And then, there's this dialogue that ensues. And finally, at the end of it, you realize that what's the person that the captain of the ship is talking to is a lighthouse. So in other words, I'm not going anywhere. And I think that's this whole prodigal thing. We think, I want fixed. Basically, the captain of the ship is our authority problem, ego figure, dream figure. That's basically belief. It's forgotten. It's really never left the lighthouse, but now it's ordering the lighthouse to, let's have things go my way here. Let's, because I think you should change to meet my needs, which is what the course calls, bringing the darkness to the light, and that's what the egos always want to do. Well, fix the dream, would you? I sure I'll do the course, but I want you to, make my life better here first,
Yeah,
after all, if I don't have a body that I like, or finances or relationships, or, yada, yada, then how can I possibly do the course unless those things are all in place to my satisfaction, right?
Exactly. And
And yet, I look like, but go ahead.
And people then drop the course. They say, well, this is not working for me. And it's not. It's never going to work for you as long as you
Right.
do that.
If that's the goal, we go in with it. And it, you know it anyway, it reminds me of now I've lost the train of thought, well, it reminded me of something that Gary Renard said, which then reminded me of an announcement that I was going to make at the beginning, but this is close enough.
Announce
And that
away.
is, and thanks to you, Lynn, in particular, because you're the one who initially alerted me to this, and now it's a well, it hasn't happened yet, but I finally got the website going, and basically enough to where people can go to it and get registered and participate. This is I'm talking about the Weekend of Freedom Retreat that's happening in Estes Park, Colorado, this coming June from the 16th to the 19th. And I'm looking forward to it tremendously. I think it's going to be a blast. The people who are featured are Gary Renard, Cindy Laura Renard, David Hoffmeister, Dove Fishman, Lori Coburn, Craig Villarubia, Maria Felipe, and yours truly. And I think it's going to be a blast. I'm really, really looking forward to it. And if you're interested, you can go to weekendoffreedomretreat.org. That's all one word except for the .org. So weekendoffreedomretreat.org. And anyway, there's all the information there. And if you haven't been to Estes Park, it's just a wonderful place. And if you're, you know, even if you're from the area, you know, in the Denver, north of Denver area, or south of Denver for that matter, it's not that far. It's a really, I think one of my favorite, if not the favorite, you know, place in terms of outdoor recreation for the Colorado area. So it'd be a great idea if you are thinking about, you know, having an outdoor vacation kind of thing, you could tack on a few days or a week or whatever in front or in back of this retreat and make a really nice, you know, or just barely pre-summer outing for yourself and whoever else. But anyway, I think it's be a lot of fun.
It looks like it's going to be awesome. And what a lineup. Oh my God. I mean, that's really an all-star lineup, Bruce. And I'm so grateful that you're going to be there. The thing is, the place is just gorgeous. And if you haven't been there, it is not just a, like you go there and you have a retreat. It's huge. It's like a huge ranch. They have, you know,
oh, so horse... you've been to the Y there too?
Yeah. Went up and scoped it out. So they have, horseback riding. They have crafts, really good crafts, ceramics and really good crafts that the kids can do. They have, a big Olympic sized indoor pool that is just gorgeous. And open all year round. There's just so many activities that you can do at that YMCA of the Rockies. So if you decided to come to the retreat and you wanted to bring your kids, you wanted to bring your family on a family vacation, they can be doing all sorts of things while at the same time, you know, you're attending the Weekend of Freedom Retreat. And I think it's going to be wonderful. I'm very excited for you guys and very, very pleased that, you know, I was at least aboard on the inception of, you know, getting this particular one going. And, you know, of course, you know, I'm planning on being there too. And Cheryl's in the room. And so she's really, really happy talking about the new website, which I did go and look at. And I really thought you were, it's very helpful. So what is the address for the website? Is that the weekendoffreedomretreat.com?
.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So weekendoffreedomretreat.org. Okay.
Yeah, if you go to the .com right now, it'll take you to last year's website, which won't be a particular help for this year's retreat. But all you do have to do is swap out the .com for the .org, and you'll get to the new one. So and a tip of the hat to Cheryl and Barrett in particular for all their help in getting this going, and also for helping me get the website going, because you know they have such a passion for this, and you know, obviously now a track record. This will be the fifth one. And you can tell that, you know, they're very inspired about putting this together and making this available to everyone. You know, kudos to them.
Yeah.
And to all the sets of participants as well and contributors. And I think it's going to be a blast. And thank you for reminding about the all the activities at the Y, too, because I haven't been to the Y. So I've been to Estes Park several times, but not to the Y in particular. So, yeah, that's a great reminder that, you know, if people have families or significant others and want to just, you know, have people you know, do other things either while, you know, before or after, you know, before, during, or after that, the Weekend of Freedom Retreat event itself, what a great place to do it. Yeah,
exactly. And you can actually, I think, can you, from the website, and I'm going to attempt to go there because right now I've got this thing where I have to alt tab over to get in to look at the internet, and now it's not doing it for me. Anyway, If you go there, there should at least the Estes Park folks have got a really nice setup on their particular website that they show you all the activities and
Yeah, and
the
there's a
cabins, the
link to that.
houses. Okay, yeah, there is a link to that. I saw that. So perfect, wonderful. All right, well, good.
And the site is just brand new out of the chute this weekend. So if there's things that aren't clear, just shoot me an email or let me know and I'll dial that in and make sure that Cheryl and Barrett say let's fix that because this is we're just trying to get the site out the door and ready for people and I think we're pretty close. But if you see anything that isn't clear or in any way we can be helpful, by all means in terms of the website in particular, let me know, and we'll make sure that it serves what you need to know to get going on the retreat and make it work for you. So,
Very cool. Thank you so much
oh,
for
you bet,
that. Yeah. So where were we?
Oh, wait, yeah. Anyway,
We're going to
yeah.
go
Look,
on the lesson today. Yes.
it's a digression, but I think it's an important one because I think it's when we come together, whether it's literally, like a retreat like this, which I think is a blast. And a lot of fun. I'm very much looking forward to it. As you mentioned, you are too. Or virtually, as we are doing, through these technological means. In either way, either case, it's an opportunity to remember what we are doing all this for, and to get back to the theater in our mind and to see, we can be the lighthouse instead of the ship that thinks it's gone astray and needs to order lighthouses around, and immovable objects. Speaking of which, I want one more quick announcement. For anybody who is in the Denver area, there's a wonderful study group that meets once per quarter. It's only, 4 times a year. That's happening tomorrow at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center from 1 to 3, and I'll probably be Skyping into that. And that's called the Lighthouse Group, and that basically ties into the work of Kenneth Wapnick, who wrote these brilliant, brilliant quarterly bulletins called the Lighthouse. And I think they were quarterly, weren't they? Were they monthly? I think they were. Well, anyway, there was about a decade or so of those, and just a large volume of these Lighthouse newsletters that were just tremendously brilliant. And so the group that meets there at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center once a quarter is meeting tomorrow afternoon. This being January 30th, that'll be the January 31st of 2016 for people who are listening to the recording. So if you catch this within the next 24 hours or so, you could attend yourself. But anyway, Chris Dixon Bubik is the facilitator for that, and she does a great job. She's part of the School for A Course in Miracles that Lynn Johnson or Lynn Corona and Tim Wise and Susan Dugan are all part of, and they do just a great job. And I recommend all of their classes very highly at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center there in Denver. So anyway, a little plug for that, and
Very cool.
then we
And
can
is
get
there a
back.
website for that?
Yeah. Oh yes. And that one, I actually have a post about the Weekend of Freedom Retreat on the Rocky Mountain Miracle site and also on ACIM blog, so you can find it in any of those places. Anyway, the Rocky Mountain Miracle site is just Rocky Mountain Miracles Center. Org. It's just Rocky Mountain Miracle Center.org, and
Okay.
you'll find information about all the classes that they have there, every day of the week, literally, at that wonderful venue. So,
Okay, very good. Well, I'm going to post the link in the room if I can get back to
okay.
it. Yeah, there we go. I don't have so much trouble getting back, I guess. It's the getting to. So, yeah, Bill Gates is in my prayers every day when I jam.
So I guess the intro to this talk could be, what do Bill Gates, lighthouses and
Satan? No, not Satan.
I can tell you have a special relationship with your technology, Lynn. Unlike everyone else, right? Somehow that sounded like one of the SNL cast,
The
maybe
church
the church
lady.
lady. Yeah, that's the one that comes to mind. Yeah. Isn't that special? Yeah, really. Oh gosh, this is good.
Yeah, it is.
Yep.
Okay, so I got that posted in the room anyway. So if I ever
Right.
get back to Windows, I'll be there. Anyway.
Yes. Anyway, so lots of cool things happen in Colorado every week, really every day of the week at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center, and then this June 16th through the 19th in Estes Park, the Weekend of Freedom Retreat, and that's the weekendoffreedomretreat.org. So enough of those for now,
Yes.
but we'll keep reminding people up until June. That's because I think it's you know worth considering if even if you're not from the Colorado area, and even especially if you are. So, but we were talking about today's workbook lesson, how it ties into what we're talking about. You know, applying it to things you know that seem to be around us as well as in our minds. Should we read the workbook lesson? What do you think? Does that work for you?
Yes, we should. Yeah, I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm testing out muting my mic since I'm not on
Oh,
the
okay.
picture. So, if you ever talk to me and I'm not talking back, then or if
Oh,
you hear me
I
making.
understand. I understand. We all multitask at times. No need to apologize, but okay. Should I start off with the first paragraph?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So lesson 30, for those of us who are doing the chronological system, which I think is fun, kind of fun. I'm doing this 2 years in a row now, and I don't know how many times I've done it over the years, but anyway, lesson 30 says, God isn't everything I see because God is in my mind. And then it starts off with the first paragraph saying, the idea for today is the springboard for vision. From this idea, the world will open up before you, and you will look upon it and see in it what you have never seen before. Nor will what you saw before be only visible to you. Well, that's pretty astonishing to consider, isn't it? And I think, again, if we take this literally in the way that we usually think of the word literal, where we have everything upside down, it doesn't really make too much sense because we think that you know we're going to go poof, we're going to disappear. There's going to be this magical thing happening with our five physical senses, and you know suddenly we'll be whisked away into some you know surrealistic, hallucinogenic, mystical reality. Nah, I don't think that's too likely and too big of a concern if you're worried about having a freak out kind of experience. But if we go return as Ken Wapnick brilliantly says, you know, return back to the mind. It's all about the mind. And then read it again. It's like, okay, if this is talking about my mind, then what does it say? It says, well, I'll just read it again. The idea for today is the springboard for vision. Well, vision has to do with the mind, and the course's definition of vision is seeing metaphorically beyond the realm of differences, then it starts to make sense because we're seeing everything and everyone as the same from the standpoint of what thought system we want, what identity we want to identify with. From this idea will the world open up before you, and you will look upon it and see in it what you have never seen before. Well, isn't that exactly what happens is when we look at the circumstances of our life and we see it as a classroom rather than a prison. If we see an opportunity to escape from victimhood by forgiving ourselves for having made up the whole belief that somehow we're at the mercy of what appears to be going on outside of us, but is really going on in our mind, that's a big shift. And the peace that comes from it, as the course says, is not a small gift. Isn't it? It ain't no little deal. That's a big deal. But everything in the world that we have made a big deal out of suddenly shifts in perspective, in proportion. And there's a wonderful little kids joke that I remember, and I made a recording with Susan Dugan about grandeur versus grandiosity yesterday, and I'll post that on ACM blog shortly. But one of the metaphors that came to mind, so I'm going to share it again because I think it's a fun one, is this little kid's riddle of how do you catch an elephant? If you only have a jar, a pair of tweezers, and a pair of binoculars. And the way you do it, according to this kid's joke, is you pick up the binoculars, turn them backwards. So now when you look through them, you see this little tiny elephant. Then you pick up the tweezers and you pick up the elephant and you put them in the jar and close the lid. That's that simple, right?
It's so simple, yes.
But see that's the kid logic that I think that we need to do is to you know not literally but metaphorically just you know see the world and all the big deals that we've made out of our issues with it, and we all have them, and to just gently smile at them. You know, I love one of Ken Wapnick's audios where he has this kind of little childish voice that he uses throughout it. And he says there's this voice that says, it's this little, this, you know, little kind voice that says, just, there's this joke that I want you to listen to. It's so funny. But you'll just have to, you know, when you're ready, listen to it. But I would love for you to listen to this joke because it's so hilarious. And then he says, but no, we take our ego so seriously. And you know, I've got to make all this stuff in the dream work properly and yada, yada, yada. But it's so funny. Just listen to this. Come on, just listen to this joke. It's just so funny.
It's true.
And that's really the, you know, that gentle, you know, sweet, like you said earlier, Lynn, this morning, that sweet voice that just says, hilarious. The big deals that we make about all the stuff in our life is just phenomenally sweet and hilarious. And we can afford to laugh at it, but only if we take that counsel. And even the word seriously doesn't really apply, but just gently listen to it. Just allow that peaceful, unassuming, unthreatening, undoing voice some consideration and just say, oh yeah, what if maybe this entire dream of a world is just a projection of a crazy, crazy, tiny, mad idea that I've made such a big deal out of that I've forgotten that it's fabricated. It's a hologram, a fractal, you know, interconnected movie of vast proportions, seemingly. That is in my mind because I can think of a distant star or even a distant galaxy in a split second, and I'm there. So if my mind travels that fast and can hop galaxies within a split second, then there's something else going on here. There's we're actually above the battleground. We're outside of space and time in truth as one being dreaming of a fragmented existence where there's a Lynn or a Cheryl or a Bruce or a whoever else is listening and good morning to you all. But the all is our real identity. It's these seemingly separate selves. That's the funny joke. It's hilarious, isn't it? When we see it above the battleground, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's so because people don't know what this looks like and they don't know how it works and they're for a sign, and you know, God only knows I went through plenty of my life looking for a sign. thinking, you know, am I doing this right? Am I doing, you know, what's going on? You know, how is this working? You know, am I getting there or whatever? And actually the sign is there all the time. And Jesus mm-hmm. tells us this, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to know if this is working, how do you feel?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the only one that we really need to pay attention to, because if we're not at peace, bingo. then we know that we've chosen one of ego's strategic diversions. And I love the acronym GIST because I think that summarizes it very nicely. The inner shield of oblivion is really some form of sin, guilt, and fear. You know, that the unholy trinity that Ken Wapnick talks about is you know, those three that deal with the past, present, or future of ego's dream world. Of condemnation, whether it's self or others, doesn't matter because it's the same result. But that the G is the guilt, which is really what forgiveness undoes. And then because the ego doesn't want to look at that and is terrified that that Toto in our mind pulls back that curtain and reveals this trembling little man pulling all the levers and moving all the dials, making this big terrifying thing. You know, the outer shield of oblivion is to have, you know, the big mighty Oz on the screen with the waves of flame leaping up and the trembling and the rumbling and the quaking of this horrific, terrifying, tyrannical vision of a world that's you know, we're at the mercy of, and you know, as Dorothy and her companions, you know, tremble, you know, at the sight of this thing. We have to, you know, again, just laugh gently. It's like we're all doing this. Every time we make a big deal out of something in the world is doing this to me again, oh man, I'm at the mercy of X, Y, or Z. Damn it! How did that happen? But we hired all the actors. They're all on our payroll, and we look down at the bottom of the screenplay. And, by golly, sure enough, there you go. You're right. Okay, I hate to admit it. As egos, we hate to admit it, but my signature is on the bottom of every page of that screenplay. I authorized this. In fact, I wrote it. I choreographed it. I staged it. I got all the costumes and the makeup and the set design and the locations and the property, the whole nine yards. We've done the whole thing, but we've conveniently assigned those roles to other actors and actresses in the script and said, oh, well, you're making me feel this way kind of thing. But the feeling is it, isn't it? That's the whole clue.
That's it.
And the other three letters of the GIST acronym that are reflected in the outer world, that appears not to be in our mind, but really is also everything that the world of physics attempts to claim is outside the mind is really in the realm of metaphysics. And the IST and the GIST acronym is individuality, which is obviously goes away if we're all one being, and space and time. So I figure if we want to have a criteria for looking at, ego strategy, the GIST acronym is a pretty helpful one, because anything involving guilt or sin or fear, that pretty much says, okay, I've made it through the outer shield of oblivion of individuality, space, and time, and now I've breached that outer wall. Now the ego is really going to pull out all the stops. So don't be surprised if you get blindsided, because it'll shift from suspicion to viciousness once we get through that outer shield. But that's the whole strategy is, keep us away from looking at the mind, because the guilt is unfounded. And if we saw that, the game would be over. The game over message would flash across the screen of our mind, and ego would say, oh no, now what do I do? Because it's nothingness would be revealed, and the everything that we really are, that is where the peace comes from, would be in place. And we're doing that moment by moment by moment. Every time we forgive ourselves or forgive what seems to be outside ourselves and just say, oh yeah, I was doing it again. And it's not worthy of, labeling with sinfulness, evilness, wickedness. It's just silly. It's like, I love how Ken Wapnick reinforces that idea over and over again. It's none of those things. It's just silly. It's just a joke. It's just a laughable thing that we forgot to laugh at. And it is hilarious. Seen from above the battleground. Seen from the lighthouse, It's like, the lighthouse is probably a bit amused at the battleship, full steam ahead, heading on a collision course. But in this case, we could dock at the lighthouse and, slow our speed down gently and then,
Yeah. Or hit the rocks.
Yeah.
If we aim for the lighthouse, we're probably going to hit the rocks.
That metaphor probably falls apart a little bit, because the lighthouse would need a nice little dock that we could pull up next to and turn to the light, but which most lighthouses probably don't have. But we have the metaphors backwards, don't we? We turn everything around. We think that this world is reality instead of being the metaphor that it is. I like to remind myself when I have those more lucid moments every now and then, is that the people that are in my life, they're the metaphors, including this made-up character, this Bruce of fiction I call myself, is one of those metaphors for a belief in separate interests. That somehow there could be an interest that has my needs elevated above everyone's else. Or if I want to switch to martyrdom, that I can think that, well, gee, my needs aren't as important as everyone else's. And either one of those is a joke, because the only way out of the maze and the only way back into the theater of our mind is to remember that everyone's interest and really the only real interest is choosing the right teacher and waking from the dream.
Exactly.
And it has nothing to do – it may take the form of listening to someone you're with and either nodding politely or offering something that is going to be helpful to them by getting our interests, our separate interests out of the way and just saying, how can I be truly helpful? But it's not about the form. It's always about you know, just getting yourself out of the way and then letting the form take care of itself.
Exactly.
You
know, exactly.
The love and do what you will.
And you don't have to worry about what to say or what to do.
Yeah.
Because you know what? He who sent you will direct you. And I found that happening to me every single time. So, you know, it's whenever I think, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to make this work? What am I? I'm thinking I'm responsible. And when I think I'm responsible, then I tend to want to do something. You know, I want to somehow make an impact. And then I start a plan. The minute I start a plan, I know that I have already stepped off the path here, you right. know, because I'm making a plan. And that doesn't mean that you don't plan things. It's
exactly.
that you don't sit around and think, how am I going to solve this problem? How am I going to make this right? How am I going to change the way this person thinks or feels? You know, how am I going to get to Bill Gates and let him know that he's ruining my life? How am I going to do these things? You know, I must make a plan. And I, you know, I've done this before. That's the thing. I've done it before over and over and over again. And every single time either found out in the end that my plan was completely unnecessary because everything was going the way it was going to go anyway, mm-hmm. which is absolutely true. Or, you know, that I've set myself into all sorts of emotional and psychological turmoil because I have an investment in how that plan works now. And if it doesn't work the way I think it should, then I take personal responsibility for screwing it up. But I can't really take responsibility for it because I'm a victim. You're the one who made me do it this way. So,
what?
So again, you know, right? That's why Jesus says a healed mind doesn't plan. Yeah. It's not because, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, decide what you're going to wear to work today. It's because you don't need to go into the depths of, in fact, it's such a lot of work. And Jesus says, you know, I'll do this for you. You know, he says it so many times in A Course in Miracles, you know, just let me take over and I'll do it for you. You don't have to even think about how you're going to do it. You don't have to ask for guidance for how to do it. Just let me do it. And it will, not only will I tell you what to do, I will do it for you. And literally, that is what happens when I step away from trying to be in charge, trying to figure out, trying to make a plan, trying to make this work. I just step away from that and let Jesus do it. I'm amazed at the solutions.
Yep. It's the old classic, you know, when you get pulled over, you know, step away from the ego vehicle and no one will get hurt, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not, again, like you say, it's not about not doing things in the world. It's basically stepping away from the teacher of separate interest, stepping away from the belief that we're different instead of the same. And that, and I think that sameness is such a helpful idea because oneness, you know, like the Course says, you know, we don't have a clue about what oneness is as because we're so identified with these separate selves. That's just like, right. Yeah. It's a nice idea. Sure. Yeah. Anything you say, Holy Spirit, but we're basically clueless in this world because of the degree that we underestimate that we've identified with the ego. And so in order for us to get out of the quagmire, you know, to reach the lighthouse without crashing the rocks, whatever metaphor works, right. We have to, you know, gently, let go of that belief system and navigate slowly but surely to the shore by seeing that everyone's the same. Everyone has the same, you know, decision-making mind and the same two thought systems. And we're all fighting that same hard battle because we've so heavily invested in our ego that it's this, like, you know, talking about water, you know, it's like, well, what's that, you know? But we swim in it. For the most part, unless we remember, like, these workbook lessons and so many things that now that we have as helpers, as symbolic reminders, to look at those and say, oh, yeah, I could see that my peace does not depend on the outcome of any particular situation or any specific thing. It really has nothing to do with what happens seemingly outside myself, but it has everything to do with which thought system I choose in my mind.
And which teacher, yes.
That well, we have to have complete access to 24/7, 365.
Yes, yeah. We do. And just the whole idea that, you know, somehow I have to make a choice is so built into us. It's a survival mechanism. It's something that is built into the ego thought system so mm-hmm. very clearly that mm-hmm. that if you rebel against it, you will be punished. You know, right. and ego will fill you full of fear, torment. Oh God, if I hadn't done this, or if I only did this, and when I'm taking responsibility for the outcome of the situation, rather than taking responsibility for my reaction, my feelings, the way that I work with the situation. But I think a big part of it is coming to the grips with the idea that the script is written and that there is nothing happening in this world. When you recognize that there's nothing happening and that, you know, everything that appears to be happening is just a part of the story that I wrote when I said, gee, I wonder what it would feel like if I, you know, what would it be like if I was separate from God and I'm a special being my own self. Oh, does that mean that babies die? Does that mean that wars happen? Does that mean that the earth is, you know, polluted? Does that mean, yeah, it means all those things. It means everything that you dislike about this world, including all the things that you like about this world, because there's nothing that we love in this world without exception. And so, you really do get into a place where, you know, you're either, you know, perfectly aligned with what's going on and not arguing with it, or you're arguing with reality. And Byron Katie says that if I argue with reality, I lose every time.
you're going to get out of my way, Lighthouse. I want you to divert your course here.
So the point that I was getting to here is that we look to the results, we look to what we hope, want, and wish was going to happen. We look to our plan, our thought, our idea of salvation. We look to our own ideas for how these things work. And, you know, Jesus tells us, you will always be disappointed. It doesn't matter what you think is going to happen. You will always just be disappointed if you follow that character, because you're going to see, and that's the purpose of it. You know, I was thinking this morning, I was listening to Richard Gere and a book by the Dalai Lama overnight, and listening to, you know, I'm sure that the people of Tibet would have been much happier if the Chinese government hadn't come and taken over and, you know, forced their leaders into exile, etc. I'm sure that that would have been their preference in the world, that never happened. However, look at what happened because of that. And we had people like Trungpa Rinpoche. We have the Karmapa. We have the Dalai Lama. We have all of these wonderful teachers who were forced to leave Tibet and come into the Western world to survive. And that has shifted and changed so much the belief system of people in the Western world by having these amazing teachers coming to our country. That now I'm talking basically about America, but in Europe and these guys went there and shared a wisdom that would have remained in Tibet. We would never have been involved with it. And now we have Shambhala, we have, all of the great, you know, Karmazong, we have Naropa, you know, we have all these incredible institutions and teachings and things that are available to us that would not have been there if the Tibetan people would have gotten what they thought would make them happy. Right. It's all a part of the plan for our salvation, and it may seem miserable at the time because you're thinking that you are an individual who's being oppressed, but the reality of it is we're not individuals, and we're unoppressible, and therefore we are actually in control of all this. Yeah. So get there.
Yeah, and it does help to give ourselves some slack as we go through this process, because it does take time to gently pry our white knuckled grip off the identity that ego has foisted upon us, that because we so fully identified with ego, that we think we're that belligerent prodigal sea captain ordering the lighthouse to get out of the way. You know, we think that we're destined for a miserable collision with reality, but actually it's just a matter of shifting our course by changing teachers that leads us safely to harbor, and we just have to get out of the way of our plan, our idea that we're going to fix the dream. We're going to put our dream repair technician on. We're going to change the illusion to our liking, and that's going to make us happy. And that's just nothing more than identifying with the figures on the screen, the dream heroes, these that we've ascribed so much, celebrity status to and importance with, that we've forgotten. It's like, this is a dramatic production of immense proportions. And no matter what seem to be the options and the alternatives in this world, this dream of a world, they're all illusion. They're all the same. And every illusory choice is not going to make us happy. But the and those are, if you can kind of think of it as the horizontal metaphor, that every ladder that the ego presents away from the, apart from the one in the middle that is the one that works, is not going to make us happy, like you were alluding to. But dimly lit, because the ego shines its light everywhere else but that, that is the ladder that the Holy Spirit asks us to climb up on. It does work. It doesn't have a, it doesn't start to get rickety as you climb up and you realize you've been tricked again. But the Holy Spirit's ladder, which we've intentionally, shined the light on everywhere else but that, that's in the center of it all, that will take us up through looking at our guilt and beyond it. Because once we look at that, once we pass that outer shield of oblivion, go through the inner shield of the mind and look at the guilt that's there, we say, there's nothing there. But we have to look at it. And the way we look at it, of course, is by moment to moment, using every single experience of our lives and seeing, this is an opportunity to forgive myself for everything I see around me as a projection of that thought system, unless I bring it back to the altar of the mind, bring the light there. And the light's always there, actually, it never left. But, then we see that we've never left perfect oneness. And by sharing those interests, we find ourselves home.
Absolutely. And guess what? We're finding ourselves at the top of the hour, Bruce.
I noticed that. I just noticed that as I was wrapping it up. So anyway, thank you again, Lynn. And I'll post this on ACI blog. And,
okay.
And I think I'll put a little lighthouse graphic to tie into the wonderful workshop that Chris Dixon Buick does at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center tomorrow. So for anybody who happens to be in the area, once a quarter, but it's a wonderful discussion about Ken Wapnick's wonderful writing. So anyway, thanks again, and have a great week, everyone.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. And I'm going to hang up from you, but I'm going to play a song here. So I think it goes right along with us, and then we're getting ready to do our morning meditation. So Bruce Rawls, I'm going to hang up from you and put on a song, and you'll hear it when you get the recording. All right, Bruce, I love you, buddy.
Likewise to all.
all you need. It's all inside of you. Just close your eyes and breathe and know that you are safe. Let go. Let go.